as it were, that has realised that the true object of desire is desire as such. In brief, romantic consumerism is window shopping, which is hugely enabled by plate glass, or as we now do, browsing on the internet, not consuming anything, but wondering what we would be like if we did. And you know the way the new Mac computers have that layer of glass, like the iPhone? I think this is a wonderful, or horrible, whichever, aestheticization in the same way, right? Now, in the Romantic period, this kind of reflexive consumerism was limited to a few avant-garde types, the Romantics themselves. To this extent, Wordsworth and De Quincey are only superficially different. Wordsworth figured out that he could stroll forever in the mountains. De Quincey figured out that you didn't need mountains if you could consume a drug that gave you the feeling of strolling in the mountains, sublime contemplative calm, and so on. Nowadays, we are all De Quincey's, all flaneurs in the shopping mall of life. This performative role, this attitude, is all the more persuasive, leading me to believe that we haven't really exited from the Romantic period, another sense in which prehistory isn't quite right for what I'm describing, but extremely right in another sense, namely that we're still caught in an attitude that we don't fully understand or become aware of. Romantic consumerism can go one step higher than the Kantian aesthetic purposelessness of window shopping when it decides to refrain from consumerism as such. This is the attitude of the boycotter, who emerges as a type in the proto-feminism of the blue stocking circle in the 1780s and 1790s, and which Percy and Mary Shelley and many others continued. The specific product boycotted was sugar, which was sentimentally described as the crystallized blood of slaves. By describing it thus, the boycotter turned the object of pleasure into an object of disgust. In order to have good taste, you have to know how to feel appropriate disgust, how to turn your nose up at something. So the zero-degree performance of taste would be spitting something out, spitting something disgusting out, or vomiting, Mr. Creosote. So the height of good taste performativity is abstaining from sugar and spice, if you are one of the Shelleys, who held correctly that spice was a product of capitalism. Their vegetarianism was thus not only anti-cruelty, but also anti-flavour. The attitude of the boycotter is that she or he has exited consumerism, but one could just as easily claim that this attitude is itself a form of consumerism, as I've just argued. It's a performance of a certain style of aesthetic judgment. So thinking that you've exited consumerism might be the most quintessentially consumerist attitude of all. In large part, this is because you see that the world of consumerism is an evil world. You, having exited this world, are good. Over there is the evil object, which you shun or seek to eliminate. Over here is the good subject, who feels good precisely insofar as she or he has separated from the evil world. I am now describing Hegel's beautiful soul, who claims precisely to have exited the evil world. Now, the twist that Hegel applies here is so beautiful that it's worth pausing over and perhaps adding a remark or two on torture, and possibly on Dick Cheney, who seems to be preoccupying us all at present. Hegel doesn't claim that the world may or may not be evil. He doesn't claim that what's wrong with the beautiful soul is that it's prejudiced and rigid in its thinking. The world is not some object that we can have different opinions about. No, the problem is much more subtle than that. The problem is that the gaze that constitutes the world as a thing over there is evil as such. This is so brilliant that it's worth repeating. Evil is not in the eye of the beholder. Evil is the eye of the beholder. Evil is the gaze that sees the world as an evil thing over yonder. Clearly we're in Bush-Cheney territory here, and in Al-Qaeda territory, with their platitudes about the axis of evil and evil America and so on. Evil is the materialism that sees evil as a lump of nasty stuff over there that I should be hell-bent on eliminating. There are really only two options. Quietism, which is to withdraw passively from the evil world, and terrorism, which is to fly a plane into it. There is some truth, then, terrible to say, in the horrifying way in which the Bush administration has classified certain forms of environmentalist action as terrorism. Its own kind of lie in the form of the truth, as it were. Unfortunately, the kind of environmental fundamentalist that sees the world as an essentialized living earth that must be saved from evil, viral humans, is the very type of the beautiful soul whose gaze is evil as such. Ironically, then, this kind of environmental isn't spiritual, if by spiritual we mean that it transcends the material world, but is instead deeply committed to a materialistic view that sees evil as a concrete thing that must be eliminated. Now, this kind of environmentalism is a form of anti-consumerism, which in my view puts it at the summit of consumerism, not beyond it, but at its very peak. It's indeed the most rarefied and pure form of consumerism on earth at this time, and as such it's plagued by beautiful soul syndrome, because it sees consumer objects and consumerisms, all the various styles, as so many rarefied things over yonder, from which it distances itself with disdain. So how do we truly exit from the beautiful soul? By taking responsibility for our attitude, for our gaze. And on the ground in slow motion, this looks like forgiveness. We are fully responsible for the present environmental catastrophe, simply because we are aware of it and can understand it. No further evidence, such as a causal link that, say, humans brought it about, should be required. In some sense, looking for a causal link only impedes us from assuming the direct responsibility that is the only sane and ethical response to global warming and the sixth mass extinction event, the two ways in which our current emergency appears to us. This means that it's worse than a waste of time trying to convince people that environmentalism is a right way of thinking, a right attitude. The current ecological emergency should have proved to us once and for all that the attitude of environmentalism, that there is a world that is separate from me, that nature exists apart from human society, is not only wrong, but dangerously part of the problem, if only because it provides a very good alibi and it impedes us from actually doing anything about our dilemma. The message of ecological awareness should not be, "We are the world," that awful charity song, but rather, "We aren't the world, and never were. There never was a nature." Letting go of a fantasy is even harder, of course, than letting go of a reality. I can't have a debate about torture because I don't think that torture is a thing over yonder that you can have different opinions about, like a flower arrangement. It isn't a matter of aesthetic judgment. Is it appropriate under certain circumstances? What is the precise threshold of pain that constitutes it? Blah, blah, blah. To see torture thus is to be subject to beautiful soul syndrome, in which things appear as alienated from me. Torture is